Blog Talk Radio.
In Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, July 25th. I have a sense of deja vu today because it was about 6 years ago, I believe, in about the month of June. It was in the summer of 2011 when we first had a conversation with our friend Frank Burke. And that conversation was the result of an article that Frank had written in the American Thinker about the managerial style of President Obama. And it focused not only on about his lack of experience on finances and so on, but the sense that he was a bit detached from the job, that he was the kind of manager who was always on coffee break or always out of the office and always unwilling to make a decision. So we spoke a little bit about that style. And today with Frank, we're going to talk about President Trump and his managerial style, of course. It's been quite interesting here in the last couple of days with the controversy regarding the Attorney General. The president has basically publicly said that if he had known this, he wouldn't have hired the Attorney General. Now, he even today made some remarks about how disenchanted he was or disappointed he was. That may all be true, and I certainly can appreciate President Trump's frustration with this investigation, which I think it's a bunch of crap. There's nothing in this Russia collusion. I mean, I think it's just a bunch of crap. So I can understand the frustration. What I don't understand, though, is why you would display it in this fashion and potentially create problems in your team by going after someone like the Attorney General, but also someone who supported you from day one, and someone who is very popular, let's just put it that way, with many of the conservative groups that came around to President Trump, people like me, who were not in the tank for President Trump, or were not with him, I should say, at the beginning, but eventually accepted him and voted for him and want him to succeed. I want President Trump to succeed, of course. So it's a bit confusing, these things coming out of the White House. And it troubles me a little bit, and we wanted to get Frank with us today and talk about President Trump's managerial style. How are you, Frank?
Well, thanks, Silvio, and thank you very much for your very kind remembrance of when we first got together. It's blossomed into quite a friendship.
it sure has, and I appreciate it very much. I just had no idea when I first interviewed you, or when we first had our show back in 2011, I had no idea that we would be sort of having a similar show about the next guy. I just it just didn't seem at the time that would be. But when we spoke about President Obama back then, Frank, we spoke about a man who was a bit disengaged. A man who was detached. In fact, it wasn't just Republicans. It wasn't just people like you and I who were saying that about President Obama. It was a lot of people, even many, many Democrats, who felt that President Obama was a bit aloof and disconnected from them. And so it wasn't just that you and I were being partisan. Many Democrats had the same issues with President Obama. Now we've come to President Trump. As I say, I voted for him. I want him to succeed. But frankly, these last 48 hours have been very troubling to me for some of the reasons I just indicated, because I happen to be a fan of Attorney General Sessions, and I think he's doing a pretty good job in implementing many of the of the campaign promises and so on. So just first of all, what's been your reaction to the story, and then we'll get into the style.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I have a different, a weird take on it, maybe. But from what I can see, now, I do not approve of Donald Trump trashing the man in public and in tweets. I think if there's something to say, you call him to the White House and you have it out privately. But there are two things involved here. And one, I lay some culpability to Sessions, because I think that before he did that, he should have picked up the phone and called President Trump and said, you know, Mr. President, I'm thinking I am going to have to recuse myself from this investigation because I talked to a couple of Russians, in which time I think Trump would have said, well, you know, look, here's the deal. I don't think that would be a good idea at all. If you feel that strongly about it, why don't you resign and I will appoint somebody else? But at least give him that warning. Secondly, and there are three things here. Secondly, what I really think is that Donald Trump is hurt. And now, you know, the guy comes on like such a forceful guy, it's hard to believe that he might be sensitive. But I really do detect, and from everything I've heard about the way he relates to his people, that there is a great deal of sensitivity there. That if you accept a position from him, he's going to back you, he's going to go to the wall with you until such time as either it just can't work out or it's got to take another direction. And I think he was, you know, he had some all-stars that he could have chosen from. Rudy Giuliani was a magnificent prosecutor. I think that, you know, Trey Gowdy, still tremendous talent in that way. Even, you know, our friend from New Jersey, Chris Christie, had a great prosecutorial record, and all would have made great AGs. But he instead went with Sessions, and Sessions is perhaps the lightest of all of them in terms of prosecution. On top of that, Sessions, as far as we know, has done nothing about all the other scandals about Hillary, the IRS, the Clinton Foundation, the Russia deal with the uranium, you name it. So I do think he's failed. And
right.
I think that, you know, Trump is the kind of guy, business-wise, it's like he put this guy, if you want to use a real estate thing, he put him in charge of a group of buildings. And suddenly, without even consulting, he sold a couple of them or something to that effect. And, you know, so I can understand his disillusion with him. Now,
well,
I don't agree with...
Yeah, let me just get something in here for a second, before you, if I may just quickly jump in.
Oh, absolutely.
I actually agree with President Trump that Sessions should have never recused himself. He didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
And I think in recusing yourself in that very high tense atmosphere, what you project weakness, and the other side picks up on that, and then they just get worse. So I actually think it was a mistake. Now, in a perfect world, I agree with you. He should have gone to President Trump and said, although I think this actually happened, I don't know if this happened after he had been confirmed or during the hearings. I don't remember now. But bottom line, you're exactly right. I think he should have gone to President Trump and said, look, I'm going to do this, and here's why. If you want to nominate somebody else, that's fine. But he didn't. He didn't. And that's just the way it is. I'm not sure, though, with the other stuff about Hillary and all of that, I'm not sure that he's had enough time to really start any of that going, Frank. And that's where I may think that the measurement might be a bit unfair, because he's only been on the job, 5 months? Some of these investigations are undergoing going on in other places like the FBI. I still think there is a Hillary email. So there's stuff going on. It's just that that Sessions is not talking about it. And one more thing I'll say about Sessions. If you're talking about the odd couple, if you're talking about two people with two completely different personalities, almost like that show, The Odd Couple, you know, Madison and the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here you have Sessions, who is this nice little Southern gentleman, and then you have, of course, Trump in your face about everything.
Right.
So I think that maybe that's part of the problem, that Sessions comes across as being too nice a guy, and Trump feels like we got to be in your face. I agree with you that Trump has every right to be frustrated, but I guess I wouldn't have handled it the way he did, and I guess that's where you were about to come in, as I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just wanted to get that in.
No, I absolutely agree with you. I think you put it beautifully. Yes, he is a very, you know, kind of a Southern gentleman, absolutely. And that you know, Trump's style is not his style. They are two very different people. But let's face it, even though it's only as long as it's been, what, 5 months, 6 months, in that time, look at all the Democrats have done with this Russia fiasco. How many people they've called, how much publicity they've gotten. And he couldn't say, he couldn't come before the cameras the second month in and say, I am starting an investigation into the email abuse by Hillary Clinton. I am also going to start an investigation into Mr. Koskinen at the IRS, who has refused to answer questions, who has stonewalled and destroyed documents. I mean, you know, he just has to say that.
Well, you're right, and but I'm not sure, again, I don't know, I'm not sure he's not doing that right now. I'm not sure that there isn't a... that these investigations are not going on. Because if you remember, some of them were going on in the FBI, and some of them were going on. And so these things may actually be going on. But I agree with you that these people ought to be investigated. And if they're not being investigated, then somebody dropped the ball. But here's how I would have handled it, Franken. I would have called in Trump personally and said, look, I'm really disappointed with what you did. Next time, fill me in before you make a decision like that. And then I would have said, you got to get the ball rolling on this, 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 and this, and that, because you're not doing any of it. That's how I would have done it, face to face. I would not have tweeted out that the Attorney General is weak. I don't know how, I mean, what else do you, I mean, Sessions, he's almost putting Sessions in a situation where Sessions is going to resign one of these days. And then, Frank, if you thought that getting Sessions confirmed was a circus, wait until the next one gets going. Because, it's going to be a number one circus. So I guess I would have preferred to say, I'm going to keep Sessions, he's my guy, but let's make some corrections, and here are some things that I want you to do. I would have kept it at that, just a conversation between me and the Attorney General, Frank.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I can see that, and that's I agree with you. I think that's what I would have done, too. I would have made it call him to the White House, have a personal conversation, and say, you know, where are we on this? What do you want to do? Are you going to move forward on it? Maybe we can overlook the recusal. That's past, that's in the past, but what's coming next? And you know, it doesn't matter whether these investigations are underway. The people need to hear that they are, because as far as the American people are concerned, Trump said he was going to go after crooked Hillary, and as far as they're concerned, they haven't seen a bit of it. So, you know, it's not just that it's happening, it's that the people have to know what's happening.
Well, and that on that we do agree, because the truth of the matter is that just on Russia alone, there is enough there to investigate Hillary Clinton. I mean, there's a lot to investigate her on. There's a lot to investigate on the Democrats, and I understand that there's a server missing and stuff like that. So there's a lot to investigate. But I guess I wouldn't have done it publicly because this kind of a, and this is where managerial style comes in, I think. I think you have to think about the impact that this is having on other people. I mean, the Justice Department right now, the people that Sessions brought in or is bringing in, they're probably wondering, am I going to have a job here in 2 weeks? Because the next guy is going to bring his own people in, I assume.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
You have that issue. You have the question of morality. You have, I mean, not morality, but morale in the department. And then there's this whole question of loyalty. Now, I'm not one of those who believes that loyalty is blind. There are times when you have to say to your best friend, this is not working out. We got to stop it or we got to end it. But I'm not sure that we're there yet with Sessions, at least not in my mind. But so anyway, what are your thoughts as from a managerial standpoint? What are your thoughts about loyalty and morale and, you know, what President Trump, what message President Trump is sending? I would also ask you another question, too, as part of that large question is, is he coming across like a bit of a desperate person? I mean, is he coming across with a little desperation by the way, by what he's doing, Frank?
Well, you know, I think that Trump, as frankly, I think he's made some mistakes, and virtually all of them have to do with communication. I understand he needs Twitter because it's the only way he can respond to the crooked media, if you will, the fake news. But he has got to keep it to the issues and get away from the personal stuff. He's appearing too thin-skinned and easily roused, and people are getting to know how to ring his chimes, so to speak. But from a business standpoint, I see him as a very, very strong executive, and he realizes that in order to get things done, he's new at the political game, and he is having to make a lot of changes in his team. But I give him the credit for making the changes. As he's seen these leaks happen, he said, hey, if this one guy isn't doing it, let's go to another guy. If there's a problem with Sean Spicer, then let's go to somebody else. And it's tough, and it's tough on the people who are there. It's been tough on the people who have supported him. But by the same token, I give him credit for saying, one way or another, I'm going to find the right team. And not having been in politics before and not knowing the insides of how some of these things are played and where all the bodies are buried, and he doesn't because he's a rank outsider, I give him credit for saying, I don't care. I'm not embarrassed. I'm not going to get embarrassed and hang on to a weak team full of leakers because people will say, oh, he didn't know what he was doing. Instead, he goes right ahead, and he tries to find the best people. And I give him credit for that.
Well, and for example, as far as communications, I think that was a good move. I think that replacing Sean Spicer with this other fellow, well, actually, Spicer was not replaced by the other fellow. The young woman, Sanders, Huckabee Sanders, actually technically replaced Spicer, but this new fellow, the Italian last name from New York.
Caramucci, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he sounds just like Trump when he talks.
Yes. He has the affect of a movie actor. He really does.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's very impressive. Actually, I saw him the other day. He's very impressive. But that was a good move, I thought, because that will work well in the long run, I think. But in this case, I guess it's not so much if, for example, let me just put it in another way, and then we'll take a quick break. But what if he had called in Sessions a couple of weeks ago and said, you know what, I'm really disenchanted with what you did about the recusal, and I'm not going to say anything, but I want you to resign. And then, you know, you can just move on. We'll just say that, you know, we have differences of opinion or whatever it may be, some nice little pleasant explanation. We won't get into details, but I'll resign, you know, you resign, and then we'll move on. I probably would have done that, too. I would have tried.
Yeah.
I guess my whole problem, Frank, and I don't mean to be like a broken record here, but it's just that I just don't believe you do that publicly to somebody at that level of a position. And someone, frankly, like Sessions, who has the following across the country that he does. Sessions was one of my favorite people for Attorney General. He may not have been the most vocal one, Frank, but I was very happy when I heard that he would be considered.
Well, Sylvia, I agree with you. I think he's a very good man. And I think he's loyal to Trump, and I think he did what he thought was right. But I think the way in which he did it was a mistake. I think if he did that without consulting, I mean, that was a huge thing to do. For the Attorney General to recuse himself from this, you know, ridiculous investigation and leave it out there and have somebody now appointing special prosecutors who are going wild. And I have no respect for Mueller, judging by the team that he has selected and the way in which he thus far is handling things, talking about looking at business deals. It's got nothing to do with what he was appointed for. He's out of control already. And his whole staff are a bunch of Clintonites. So, I have a lot of affection and respect for Sessions, but I think he made a grave mistake in what he did.
Well, I'm with you. I'm sorry. Go ahead and finish.
I was just going to say, but Trump should not have handled it this way. He should have done it in private and with decorum.
Right. I'm with you 100% on that. And with respect to Mueller, you're exactly right. I mean, this is a man who's put together a team. Everybody keeps telling me how smart this guy is and how fair this guy is. He may be. But if I'm going to put a team to investigate a Republican president and I load it up with Democrat lawyers who've donated money to the Democrats at a time when the country is this polarized, that at the very least doesn't show me a lot of good judgment on the part of Robert Mueller. I mean, if I was one of his assistants or if I was the assistant attorney general who he responds to, I would call him on the phone and say, Mr. Mueller, what are you doing? Everybody that you're hiring has a Democrat connection. I mean, that's not going to look real good, Mr. Mueller. That's what I would do. I'm with you on Mueller. I think Mueller will probably end up getting fired. And it wouldn't bother me if he did, Frank.
No. Well, not to mention the fact that Mueller was interviewed for the job of AG and didn't get it. So you say, okay, is there a kind of, you know, aha, now I'm in the driver's seat attitude there? I mean, we're all human.
Yeah. Well, that may be, and that may be too. But I don't like these independent counsels, and, you know, because you end up, as you say, you know, you end up driving to Waco and you end up in St. Louis. And it's like, you know, because they go in all kinds of directions, and people need to remember that the investigation of Bill Clinton began with a scandal in Whitewater and ended up with Monica Lewinsky. That's a stretch, Frank, to say the least. That's a heck of a stretch.
Absolutely.
And I'm not defending President Clinton. I'm just saying that shows what can happen with these special counsels. The one who investigated Iran-Contra was on the job, I think, for like 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knew what
mm-hmm.
he was doing. You know, he just kept, you know, hiring people and subpoena people. And at the end, he indicted three people in President Bush's staff. Secretary Weinberger and a couple of other people just happened to be indicted on the Friday before the election. That takes a lot of sense, doesn't it? That makes
a lot of
sense.
It does. And like, you know, the one that was investigating the Valerie Plame case and even when he was told, no, Libby had nothing to do with it, they end up putting him in prison. This is totally unjust.
That's right. So I don't like these independent counsels. I think that's why we have a Congress. That's why we have committees.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm willing to trust the political branches because at least it's in the open and there'll be people on both sides to argue the case. Let me take a little break, Frank. When we come back, I want to talk. I want to get your impressions on what just happened in San Antonio, this absolutely incredible tragedy of these people found inside
yes.
a truck. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. We're talking tonight with our good friend Frank Burke. We have a link on the show information to Frank's book, as well as his articles at American Thinker. You will see there in that list of articles the one that I was talking about the leadership style or the managerial style of President Obama, written back in 2011. Frank, I'm sure the whole country knows by now about this absolutely horrific tragedy in San Antonio where a bunch of people were literally left to die inside a truck here in Texas in this summer heat. What was your reaction when you heard the story, Frank? Your gut reaction to the whole thing.
Well, you know, I felt terrible for the people involved. I mean, I think these people, yes, are they doing the wrong thing? Sure. But nobody deserves to go like that. But why in the hell would you ever trust anybody? Would you ever climb into a truck in that kind of heat to take that trip? Now, I can't read their minds. I know these are desperate people, and some of them may have been coerced. But I am with the people who are saying now, this is what the sanctuary city movement encourages. When you have people who disparage the law, they are going to say, hey, you folks are welcome, you know. Emmanuel, Rahm Emanuel in Chicago, oh, we're an open city, come right up here. They encourage that kind of thing. And the chances that these people are taking are terrible. Not to mention the fact that many of these coyotes or whatever they are called are involved with the drug cartels and are just doing this to hurt these people and get their money.
Right.
It's tragic all around, and it really, really has to stop.
Yes, I'm with you. There was a tragedy like this, actually, not long ago, a few years ago in 2013. It didn't happen in Texas. It happened, I think, in Arizona, but it was the same situation. But here are the things that really puzzle me about this whole thing. They were interviewing a person, one of the people in the truck, who managed to get to the hospital, and they were able to save this person. And he said, he told a reporter in San Antonio, that he had paid, Frank, $5,000 to get on that truck.
Yeah.
So now I'm sitting there going, okay, there's probably, I'm going to guess, maybe 40 people, 50 people in that truck. If each one of them paid $5,000, 50 times $5,000 is whatever, $250,000.
Yep.
That's a $250,000 delivery. I mean, that'd be pretty big if they were delivering anything else other than people. And then on top of that, you now have videos there in San Antonio at the Walmart where apparently cars would come, pick up people, but some stayed in the truck. And I'm beginning to wonder if the ones who stayed maybe had not paid their money, or there was a deal with their family, would come by and deliver, pay the balance, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And then, of course, there's the whole question of sanctuary cities. It's not a coincidence at all that they went to San Antonio, which is one of our sanctuary cities. That's not a coincidence.
Yes.
They didn't go to a lot. I mean, when you take that road, I-35, there's a lot of other cities they go by. But they went to San Antonio. So that tells me that they knew that going to a sanctuary city was the place to be, Frank.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, Sylvia, there's nothing new about this. I've studied being Irish and of Irish extraction. My dad was from Ireland. I've studied a lot about the Great Famine. And, you know, over a million people died in 1847-48 when the potato crop failed in Ireland. And many of these poor peasants would have given anything to come to the United States. And these very, very unscrupulous individuals created what were called in the end coffin ships. They bought these old ships that were not seaworthy, and they charged these people money and filled the ships with them and sent them out, and many of them sank, and everyone was lost. And they made a huge profit. And these trucks are the coffin ships of the present day. You have people making large profits. They don't care whether those people get here or not. But as you say, San Antonio is the destination because it was, or is, a so-called sanctuary city. And until and unless the government cracks down on that, you're going to have that mentality, and you're going to have that kind of people, you know, going, trying to reach these places.
Right.
The other thing I think is always, well, it's never spoken about. And I go back to when George Bush was president and Vicente Fox was the president of Mexico. And he was so high-handed. He was telling Bush, well, no, we're going to do it this way. Hey, that government is so corrupt. It is time that this country brought the hammer down on these people and said, gentlemen, clean up your act, because we're not going to negotiate with you on an even basis. You do not deserve it.
Right. Well, you make a very good point. I'm certainly not a defender of Mexican corruption, although I have to tell you that I think that there are parts of the Mexican border right now that are completely out of completely being controlled by these criminal elements, whether it's cartels or human smugglers, whatever it may be. Because these individuals, Frank, it does appear that they were picked up inside the United States, which means it wasn't like the truck went into Mexico and picked them up. No, they were already in the United States, so somehow they got into the United States. And when they were here, they were put in that truck somewhere in South Texas, wherever, you know, wherever it happened, I don't know. So it all has the look of an extremely well-organized operation. That's what I'm trying to say, that this is not, you know, you mentioned coyotes, and coyotes were people, the tradition of coyotes goes back a long time. A coyote is nothing more than a guy who would bring you over. But generally, it was an independent contractor, if you know what I mean. Basically,
yes.
It was like if you needed to come over, you would check around, and these people were known as coyotes, and somebody would say, well, you know, Johnny over here helped my uncle get over, and he's a pretty good guy, you know, he's not going to charge you an arm and a leg. So that's what coyotes were for a long time. They were basically, they were not out to hurt people. They just wanted to make money and take advantage of a situation. But generally, they brought you over here. They kind of walked you through the desert and say, no, we don't want to go this way because that's full of snakes, so let's go this way. And that's what they did, these coyotes. But this operation is not coyotes. This operation, there's a bunch of people involved in this operation. First of all, you got to pick up a truck. You got to find a truck driver. You got to get these people over here. I mean, you know what I mean, Frank. This is a complex distribution system, Frank, if I could put it that way.
Right, exactly. Well, and it's got to have some sponsorship, and the sponsorship in this case is probably the drug cartels.
I would think so, because they're from what we hear, they're the ones who have basically taken over human smuggling, particularly in larger quantities. I mean, there are still, you know, there's still a coyote here and there that will bring one person or two people, but in the kinds of numbers that we're talking about here, and the kinds of prices. I mean, $5,000.
That is a lot of money.
Well, that's
Where did they get that money?
Well, Frank, $5,000 would be a lot for an American.
Yeah.
I mean, and then on top of that, you're talking about a Mexican. Many of these individuals are not well educated. I mean, they come from the poor sections of Mexico and so on. So where do you get $5,000? Well, I guess you save it for a long time. About, you know, you want to go to the United States, you save it. But still, that's a lot of money, Frank. And if there were, let's say, 100 people in that truck, or whatever the number, that's a big, big delivery, Frank.
It truly is. And the thing that amazes me is that if you were going to do this, why wouldn't you make some kind of provision to at least keep the poor people alive, for God's sake, you know? Put more air holes in the truck or whatever. Have provisions in there, have water in the truck. Because let's face it, these people are worth money. And if you look at it in totally crass commercial circumstances, you know, if you're moving animals by truck, you have to feed and water them. That's the law. And why somebody wouldn't at least be that, if not humane, at least business savvy, that they say, hey, if I get these people over, they're going to want their families over. Maybe these other people, their family over there, will be another $5,000.
Well, that's true. And also, it complicates things considerably when there are dead people, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
I mean, now there's 10, you know, there's 10 people dead already. There are others who are pretty sick. By the time this is over, it wouldn't surprise me if a couple more die.
Right.
I mean, you don't spend, Frank, it's 100 degrees in the afternoon here in Texas. And these poor people were sitting inside a trailer. And they say the temperatures inside the trailer were 150. They couldn't breathe. There was no water.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about mass casualties here. And you would think what you said is true. I mean, that you would find at least a refrigerated truck.
Right.
With some facilities so that at the very least the people would survive.
Right.
But that wasn't the case at all. So now not only are some people going to be indicted because of human smuggling, now they're going to be indicted because 10 people are dead. I would think the truck driver of this truck is in deep trouble. But, you know, he's going to open up and probably talk about a lot of other people. He's not going to go down by himself, Frank.
Mm-hmm. No, I would agree, and I hope he doesn't. I hope he knows who else is involved in this kind of thing.
Well, so far he's claiming that he didn't know that he was carrying human beings. Which
I don't know how that could be.
Yeah, I don't know how that could be. I mean, if he did not see these cars coming by and picking up people and so on, then he's legally blind,
mm-hmm.
which is another problem that he has driving. You know, well, he's legally blind or whatever. So I'm not making fun of it.
Well, his license was revoked in April, yeah.
Oh, it was. I didn't realize that. So it was revoked. I didn't know that. So So that's another problem that he has. No, but I think overall, I mean, obviously the tragedy of the individuals and what we have here is a policy that that encourages people to come over, waiting to be legalized, and that encourages more people to come over. And if I was if I was some of these Democrats, I would say, folks, if you've got $5,000, we know plenty of attorneys who will try to get you legally over here.
Yeah.
So don't give it to a cartel, you know, because we can introduce you to a bunch of attorneys in Texas who will, for $5,000, do a pretty good job of bringing you legally into the United States, Frank.
Well, absolutely, Silvio. And, you know, the other thing, too, when you come right down to it, insofar as that goes, these poor people who are trying to make this trip, they need to be, I hope that the U.S. government publicizes what happened here on the other side of the border. I know there are a lot of people there who can't read, but use pictures, use whatever you can, and let people know this is the kind of thing that can happen to you. This is very dangerous.
Right. Well, I think that they will probably broadcast that in Spanish. This is apparently getting tremendous television coverage in Mexico because all of the people in the truck were Mexicans, Mexican nationals. So this is, I'm sure, going to get a lot of publicity down there, and the funerals of these people will be well covered and all of that. But I just, when I saw the whole thing, when I read as much as I did about it, I said this is a well financed operation, and these poor people are being used, and somebody's making a bunch of money doing this, and that's who we got to go after. We got to go after those people who are making money, because this is a crime of crime. I don't know how else to describe it, Frank.
Well, you're absolutely right, Silvio. And you know the importance of human life. When you look at what just happened in England with that poor baby with Charlie Gard, and there's a really great lesson to everybody who wants single payer insurance and a national health service in the United States. But you look at the tragedy of that one life, and then you look at what's happened here, where there are at least 10, and there are probably other people who, as a result of that experience, that lack of oxygen, whatever, in that truck, will never be the same. And their potential is lost. And we are dealing with some real tragedy here.
Right.
And it's time that some of these loudmouth liberals who are so self-righteous and talking about, you know, sanctuary cities and, a free world and an open world and one world and all that, it's about time they got their heads on straight and said, hey, this is what it leads to. This is the kind of stuff it leads to.
Exactly.
This and the Muslim attacks in Europe.
Right. Well, I will tell you, quite frankly, that to me, this is a terrible story in San Antonio, and it's all about human smuggling. This is not about immigration reform, like some of them are trying to make it. You know, if we had immigration reform, we wouldn't have this. I don't buy that. I think this is all about the fact is that immigration reform would not stop people from coming over. Now, they may not get a job when they come over. I understand that. But there is always a temptation to come over and work illegally because you can make some money under the table. So that temptation has always existed, even when we had more strict border policies before. But to me, we got to go after the people who are engaging in this human smuggling. That's what the focus ought to be. And you're right about the Mexican government. We need to hold them responsible because these are Mexican citizens who came over here and... Well, we know what happened to them. 10 are dead, and probably a few more will die. And then, of course, you have the damage to some of the others who are. I've heard brain damage is a possibility here. All kinds of things that could happen to these people, Frank.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And you know, it's I don't think that these people have a mind to stop it, because there's one tragic incident like this. There are trucks on the road as we speak, I'm sure, loaded with these people.
That's the, you know, Frank, that's exactly what I was thinking. I said, how many more trucks like these?
Yeah.
How many more trucks are going up and down I-35 right now?
Mm-hmm.
In exactly this situation. I just hope that the police is maybe stopping a few of these trucks and asking for a check of cargo, if you know what I mean. Because,
Absolutely.
But you know what's interesting, Frank? I'll say one more thing. Those of us who are familiar with I-35, which is the highway that goes from Laredo to Dallas and goes to San Antonio and Austin, I-35, when you're on the Mexico border, because I've done this, when you're in the Mexico border and you cross into the United States, you go through customs, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Then you drive maybe 10 miles into Texas, into I-35, and then there are other stops where they stop you again. And there it's more of a random thing. They don't stop everybody, but they'll say, okay, can you open your trunk, please? Can we look inside your truck? And this particular truck was able to evade every single legal stop along the way. Now, maybe they got lucky. It's possible they got lucky. I'm not discounting that situation, Frank. But still, I kind of get the feeling that these individuals were not boarded on I-35. I think there must have been some side roads or something where they were picked up, put on the truck, and then the driver knew exactly where to get to on I-35 so that he wouldn't have to go through these stops. I mean, these are smart people. They know what they're doing, Frank.
Well, you know, that's one way, Silvio. But the other way is this. If you have $5,000 per person, you've got some money in there for bribery. And I'm not accusing anybody, and I hope it isn't the case. But the truck pulls up to a, you know, stop, an envelope is exchanged. I mean, we know this happened during Prohibition,
right.
And that it is not unheard of that, people end up retiring very well from what seems to be a reasonably low-paying job,
right.
Inspecting trucks. But
right, public servants who retire with incredible fortunes that
yes,
no one can
exactly,
figure out
exactly.
how they made it. I hopefully that's not the case. I would be very disenchanted if that's the case, but you certainly cannot overrule that possibility. Well, Frank, as always, it's a great honor to have you. It's a great pleasure to have you. We have a rock and roll show that we have pending.
Absolutely.
And we're going to do that. We're going to do that in the next couple of weeks. And I just wanted to remind you and the audience that 50 years ago this week, the number one song in the country was Light My Fire by the Doors.
Very good, very good. I appreciate your devotion to music, Sylvia.
Either that or trivia. Or as
right.
My father used to say, I love the fact that you're interested in things that nobody cares about.
You know, my father said the same thing. He referred to it as useless information.
Well, my father said to me one time, I was impressing him with all these things, and he said, well, that's wonderful that you know somebody's batting average in the 22nd game of the 1942 season. But what exactly does that have to do with the conversation we're having? And I said, well, nothing, Father. I'm just distracting you. I thought so, he said.
Well, the other side of it, though, is we are the repositories of the history of Western civilization.
Well, there you go. And when I'm sure when historians write about right about the 20th century in the late 60s, I'm sure they'll say something about Jim Morrison and the Doors.
Well, you know, just one quick comment. You see a lot of shows on television based on these stories by people like Jane Austen, the middle of the 19th century. And if you really look at it, the plots are lousy. But the reason the people are watching the shows is the fact that it shows the details of a way of life that is long gone. And the fascinating thing about history, the details of everyday life. You know, we know what the great men did, but what did people do at home? What did the Silvios and the Franks of 1850 do at home? And that's the fascinating question.
I think you're exactly right. I know we were not doing a radio show. That much I can tell you. In the 1850s, maybe we were having a beer somewhere, talking about all these things, but not over the internet and radio. That much I can assure you. But we probably did it somewhere. I'm sure our ancestors probably got together somewhere and had a nice conversation. I want to believe that, Frank.
Oh, I absolutely think so. I absolutely think so. And, you know, when we were kids, Silvio, the ethnic humor, which everybody, for the most part, you know, people took it in stride and they enjoyed it, especially if it was about their own group. And we miss that. We miss what political correctness has robbed us of.
I think you're right, and you're exactly right, because political humor, jokes about ethnic groups and all of that was something we all grew up listening. Nobody had more jokes about Cubans than we Cubans did, for example.
Right, or the Irish than we Irish.
Yeah, I mean, we used to torture each other with stories about how stupid and how idiotic Cubans were. And so we used to have a lot of fun doing that. But you can't do that anymore because somebody gets angry, somebody's disappointed, and then they want to sue you, and they've taken all the fun out of life. But, Frank, have a great evening. Thank you for your time, and thanks for your input, as always.
Well, you too. It's a great honor for me to be here, Silvio. God bless. And to our audience and to all of us, say a little prayer for those people who died and for the families and all of those who still survive and need the help.
Are you ever right? I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, when you get through all the politics, I mean, these people, I'm sure that's the last thing they were thinking when they got in that truck, Frank. It's horrible.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, absolutely horrible. Well, thank you very much, Frank. Have a great week, and we'll do our rock and roll show here in a couple of weeks.
We're ready, Sylvia.
We're ready for it. That's it, Frank. Thank you so much. Well, have
okay.
a great day, Frank. Thank you so
you
much.
You too, Sylvia.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up, folks. Thank you for listening. It's been a really interesting day here in the news with everything going on with Trump and Sessions and the terrible thing in San Antonio. There was also Obamacare that was in the news today. It passed the U.S. Senate. I think we'll get into that more on our next show. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.